You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, we look at the fate of the detention camp at Guantanamo Bay under a possible President Trump or Clinton.
First, there's a nationwide push underway to make computer coding an essential part of school curriculums. In his State of the Union address earlier this year, the president said schools should be, quote, offering the students the hands-on computer science and math classes that make them job-ready on day one. Coding is expected to be a huge part of that, and advocates say that teaching kids coding today will prepare them for the jobs of tomorrow.
But as our next guest points out, there are still some pretty steep logistical challenges facing the Coding for All movement, things like a shortage of teachers, a non-universal curriculum, and disparities in students' access to computers.
There's also an argument that coding is too narrow a focus, one that's being pushed by business leaders, maybe not for the right reasons. So what's the solution? Is coding really the answer?
Annie Murphy-Paul joins us now. She's an author, magazine journalist, consultant, and speaker. Her latest piece for Scientific American is called The Coding Revolution. Annie, thanks a lot for joining us.
Oh, I'm pleased to be here. Thanks for having me on.
So let's start with the argument that all kids should learn coding in school. What is the thinking behind that argument?
Well, the idea is that this is the quintessential job of the future, that this is something that almost everybody should need to know, will need to know, and that in particular, this could be a way of lifting up disadvantaged communities because there's going to be a big need for people to fill these jobs, and we can help that the cause of equality along by training all of America's kids, maybe especially economically disadvantaged and minority kids, so that they have access to this enormous opportunity that people in the technology world see opening up.
And right now, how close are we to that goal of universal coding in all schools?
We are really, really far away. Just to give you a sense, the advanced placement test in computer science is given at only 4,310 U.S. high schools, and that's 12% of American high schools. So even if we were to commit to teaching every student how to code, there literally would not be nearly enough teachers who are trained and ready to take on that responsibility.
So from the educator perspective, what would need to happen to prepare enough educators to accomplish this kind of universal coding?
Well, one approach might be to build education in computer science into teacher training programs, into schools of education. There might be some kind of massive effort to retrain teachers who are already on the job. And we could perhaps persuade people who have this this expertise already to go into teaching, although that's another challenge. Because there's such demand for people who can program, most people who have those skills are going to be out there in the workforce, not in the public schools, but in, you know, gravitating towards Silicon Valley.
And it also sounds like, based on research done in 2008, that not all coding education is created equal and not all kids are going to be getting the same education when it comes to coding. And what kind of problems do you see there with this idea of virtual segregation?
Right. There's some really interesting and important research done by a woman named Jane Margulies at UCLA. She looked at the computer science education that's typically offered to white, affluent, suburban public school students, and then compared that to the computer science education offered to predominantly minority, urban, more disadvantaged school districts. And she found that the latter students were getting a kind of cut-and-paste, like, here's how you use a word processing program, not very in-depth, not very cumulative, it didn't build on itself, whereas the more privileged students who already probably had access to this kind of tutoring or, skill building at home, they were also getting much more comprehensive and in-depth and also creative and exciting and fun instruction in computer science in their schools. So then, you know, the predictable outcome of that is that many more affluent white, often male students go into computer science, and we say, well, that's the product of their choice. That's their that's what they've gravitated towards, when really the opportunities to learn and to enjoy and to identify with computer science were never equal in the first place.
We're talking with Annie Murphy-Paul right now. She has a new piece in Scientific American. It's called The Coding Revolution. And Annie, in terms of access to the materials, computers in this case, how big a problem is it getting equal access beyond something like a smartphone or a tablet, equal access for all students?
Yeah, I think it's a common assumption that, you know, this is the digital generation. They all have computers. They all have Wi-Fi access, and it's simply not true. In fact, there was a really poignant op-ed in the New York Times a couple days ago by the man who, Tony Marks, who is in charge of the New York City Public Libraries, and he was pointing out that there are kids who hang out on the steps of the Bronx Library, Public Library, after it has closed, so that they can pick up some of the Wi-Fi signal that's leaking, you know, sort of accidentally out of the building, because that's the only way they can do their homework, which is largely online. They don't have access to computers at home. And I, for the article in Scientific American, I talked to a teacher at an inner-city high school in Los Angeles who said that while most of her students do have smartphones, and they use them for texting and games and Snapchat and Facebook, that's an entirely different thing from knowing how to really use a computer for all the applications that one would that we all use computers for in our professional lives, in our personal lives. The digital divide may look different than it used to, but it's still definitely there.
And you write about some critics who say that all of this emphasis on getting kids in all schools to learn how to code, that it's too narrow a focus. So what do they mean by that?
Well, one concern is that, you know, there are specific coding languages that may be in vogue right now. Those seem to change fairly often. Even professional programmers have to be keeping up with you know, the latest coding language. And it may be that if we're teaching, say, fourth graders today a coding language that won't exist when they're graduating and going into the workforce, that perhaps that's not as good a use of their educational time as some kind of more broad-based approach to understanding computers and how they work. So ultimately, in my article, I ended up focusing on something called computational thinking, which is a term that describes learning about computers as a discipline, as a way of approaching problems, solving problems, dealing with information, all these capabilities that are going to be important for everyone in a way that perhaps knowing a specific coding language isn't going to be as useful.
Computational thinking sounds broader. It also sounds more abstract. Is there a curriculum developed already around that idea of computational thinking?
Schools are working on that. There's no kind of agreed upon curriculum. It's all kind of emerging as we speak. But I did interview a number of people from a school district in Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania that has woven computational thinking into every class and every grade. And that means teaching students how to approach problems and subject matter in the way that a computer scientist would approach it. Gathering data, testing hypotheses, iterating and trying new things and seeing what works, breaking things down and then building your model back up. And they've had a lot of success with it. Now, again, this is a more affluent, more highly educated community that is around the universities that are at the core of Pittsburgh. But there was another school that I looked at in Washington State where interestingly, they're just outside Seattle, where there are all these tech giants, and yet these students who are, many of whom speak English as a second language and who are economically disadvantaged, they feel very cut off from this shiny tech world that is, you know, just across town. And there, too, they are learning computational thinking, and they have a computational thinking program manager whose job it is to collaborate with teachers in who teach specific subjects, whether it's math or history or English, and weave computational thinking into those courses. And so people are trying all different kinds of things. I think right now, as usual, the American educational system is not unified in any sense. People are doing all different kinds of approaches, and that means that it's both a laboratory for innovation in many ways, but also that there are a whole lot of students who aren't getting any computer science education at all.
Annie, thanks so much for joining us. That was Annie Murphy-Paul, who's an author, magazine journalist, consultant, and speaker. Her latest piece, The Coding Revolution in Scientific American.
Coming up, Guantanamo Bay under a new president. This is Central Time.